Going to continue chatting and taking your phone calls with the philosopher Jeff Grupp right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to get into some of his thoughts about some popular theories and why he believes that they are incorrect. So we'll get that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, tell me why you believe that nearly all the big and popular theories in academia are incorrect, such as the Big Bang and things like that.
Evolution, Big Bang, plate tectonics. Obviously global warming, that's an easy one. But the big theories in academia are not based on proper evidence. And like we were talking about evolution a little while ago, if you just go ask the evolutionary scientist, you know, to present the evidence, what they'll start doing is giving you a lot of theoretical models and so forth that don't really mean anything. You know, like we were talking about the idea of mutations a little while ago, right before a break. And the idea of we're told that mutations lead to, you know, species changing through times. Well, that's never been observed in the environment, first of all. And second of all, I don't see how it can really happen for the following reasons. Remember, we were talking about how I imagined, you know, some deer in a savanna, which are undergoing mutations over some period, you know, period of time, say it. They all have to mutate in just exactly the same way in order to reproduce and have the mutated trait be passed on. It has to be a dominant trait for it to pass on, or they have to mutate in the same way. And it seems that a reproductive group would never have enough mutations correlating together for anything like that to ever happen, to have an entire species change. So that would mean a remarkable amount of creatures with incredibly similar mutations. And I really don't... Mutation is sort of an undirected thing. It can happen in any given amount of tremendous different ways. So it just seems to be a wild theory. So there's no mechanism for how... There's not proper evidence for evolution as a whole, let alone human evolution is the most problematical issue. There's just a huge gap where, you know, from chimpanzees to humans, we're told there's a number of skulls that, you know, about 30 or 40 skulls that supposedly are the, you know, the interim steps between those. But that, like I was saying earlier, that's incredibly careless to say that. You know, when a scientist holds up a skull and says, here's Australopithecus or Homo habilis or something, mm-hmm. you know, these intermediary creatures, supposedly, what they're not telling you is that, you know, a lot of scientists out there just think it's a baboon skull, you know, and most of the scientists were fighting to figure out how to piece together the thing. You know, skull or bones like Lucy, they don't even have a skull associated with them. So it's very careless to, you know, act so assured, you know, the way they do about these things. Let's take another example, George, extrasolar planets. There's probably some extrasolar planets that are being discovered, but this is another area where it's really, if you just look into it a little bit, it's really shocking that this science exists in the careless way that it does, on the one hand. And second, the mass media will just report, they'll say, you know, Jupiter-like planet was found around some star, and then, you know, just report on it, and then everybody believes it. But if you just look into the story just a tiny bit, a number of things will happen. You'll find out that their means for determining a planet, they never actually see a planet, okay? What they do is they'll measure tiny little fluctuations of various sorts in a star, and then theoretically determine what kind of planet they think must be circling the star according to, you know, whatever kind of variation in the star that they think that they're seeing. And what you find out is the measurements are unbelievably difficult to figure out, to even find out if there are these fluctuations. It sometimes takes supercomputers and months to figure it out. Then finally they say, okay, we think we have it. And then the media goes crazy and say, yes, they did get it. They discovered a planet. And then often, very many times, George, they'll come out like 6 months later in a scientific journal. They'll say, well, we thought we found a planet, but now we're actually recounting that we actually didn't find one. And the media won't report on that. I mean, this kind of trend happens over and over and over with extrasolar planets. Now, probably they are discovering some, I'm not saying every case, but it's just, you know, the extrasolar, you know, the planets going around other stars, that is a very, very careless science. I mean, then you can go to something like plate tectonics, for example. The main theory in academia used to be expanding Earth, which I know that you've had Neil on talking a lot about that, right, on your show. And that was the dominant theory in academia for a long time, for a lot of empirical reasons. And then all of a sudden it was just sort of overtaken for not real clear reasons by plate tectonics. Now, we went a long time being told that plate tectonics is right, and nobody was really, that's the idea where the continents are sort of floating around on the Earth and they're smashing into each other slowly through time and so forth, and that creates the structure that we see on the continents all over the Earth. Now, it was just only about 10 years ago that they started putting GPS on the continents to actually try to measure if they're really moving apart in the ways that are suggested. It does seem that there is roughly something, some kind of movement that is that plate tectonics predicts going on according to GPS, but it's very, very vague measurements in many cases. And furthermore, George, a lot of the measurements would also be verified by expanding Earth theory. For example, if you have two continents moving apart, if the Earth is expanding, well, imagine a balloon blowing up and you've got two dots drawn on, you took a pen and drew two dots on the side of the balloon. When you blow up the balloon, the two dots are going to separate from each other.
Okay? Sure, so they'll get farther and farther apart.
Yeah. And also, if you have a differential expansion, which I think most people who hold expanding Earth theory think that there's a differential expansion, like one little section here by Australia is rising faster. You know, you can't see this stuff. It happens very slowly, but you can measure it. Scientists are routinely measuring parts of the Earth expanding upward, and very much less so finding parts of the Earth that are going down in elevation. So now, what you can have is imagine a sphere where, you know, the top left and the top right had parts expanding really fast, and then in the very top, it was expanding to a slower degree. Now, it's going to look like those parts are coming together because they're at the very top because they're expanding to a shorter or to a slower degree. So the point here is that I don't know why plate tectonics has overtaken expanded Earth theory or vice versa. Really, nobody has a clue. But if you go watch the Discovery Channel or something, or go to listen to your university lecturer, it's as if plate tectonics has been empirically verified, which is not the case. Let me give you another quick, really interesting example, George, about dinosaur extinction. We're told, you know, that the dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago. Usually we're told from a space impact. Now, there's a lot of ideas packed in there, that they went extinct, that they existed that long ago, and space impact. Now, this is really, really interesting because this is just held by almost everybody. That, you know, sometimes people say, well, they might have, you know, a volcano might have done them in, or they evolved into birds or something like that. But usually people say, well, we think it's a space impact because we have all such and such evidence. Well, there's a huge, huge problem with this, George, because according to, if you believe the evolutionary theory, I don't buy into all this stuff, but if you go by their terms, you know, that they'll tell you that crocodiles were around 220 million years ago, and frogs were around back around that time also, and then the dinosaurs went extinct much more recently, 65 million years ago, because an asteroid or comet hit the Earth, put a bunch of dust in the atmosphere, blocked out the sun, blocked out photosynthesis, and then a lot of stuff went extinct.
So like what happened to the crocodiles?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, I think frogs are about the most sensitive creature on the planet, and they made it. So the whole theory of dinosaurs going extinct because of a space impact is just, but this, we're not even experts. I don't even have a degree in paleontology. But still, we don't need those to know that there's a huge problem here in a theory that basically everybody holds. I mean, you can go down the line of all the theories, one after the other, and present simple little pieces of data that we all can verify with our own eyes in many cases, or that some professors out there have even already published articles on, to find out that they're incorrect, or more politely put, not sufficient evidence understatement has been provided. So this is just a really interesting, I mean, the whole idea that, you know, culture can be misled. You know, remember how we were so misled with the weapons of mass destruction, George? You know, I mean, that was just amazing. You know, everybody in 2003, you look at the opinion polls, if those are correct, 90% of Americans were for it. And then 2 years later, you know, it's 40%.
But that tells you, Jeff, how you can lie to the masses with anything you want. Anything.
Yep. And it's scientists are not exempt from this. There may be the worst case, in the worst position of all, with some of the things we're saying here. So just because you're a very intelligent scientist doesn't mean that the culture is very, very peculiar, and that basically we're a lot of people running around believing that true things are false and false things are true. And I think the only remedy for this really are things like skepticism, or hardcore empirical analysis, you know, use really obeying what your senses report and so forth. You know, I mean, we could go through, you know, old Earth theories and Big Bang theory and so forth. And these, it really, George, we don't really know what's going on. I mean, we've got a. Don't you ever notice?
All right, that's cut to the chase. We don't know anything, do we?
Well, that's kind of what the point I want to convey. I mean, a lot of times people will just have a theory and they'll say to themselves, "Well, you know, I don't need to analyze this topic or that. You know, I don't need to analyze this thing to do with God or this thing to do with evolution or creationism or whatever because I've already got a theory in my mind, so that's all solved." And they don't look into the issue. I think that's what people worldwide are doing. They have certain, you know, unchecked theories, and that keeps them from understanding that the theories are in a lot of cases bogus. I mean, remember Orwell in 1984, you know, everybody tells each other a lie, so nobody knows that the lie isn't the truth. So, you know, and everybody's just deceiving each other constantly. So it's almost as if theories in general are just a big, big problem, and it's a lower form of knowing or information than other things like skepticism or empiricism and so forth. I think that conspiracy theorists are much, much better skeptics and empiricists. You know, empiricist is someone who really adheres to what their senses report to them and thinks that's a really good source of information, what your five senses report. I think conspiracy theorists do, to be honest, George, a much better job of being skeptics and empiricists than mainstream scientists or mainstream academics.
I agree. As long as they don't look at everything as a conspiracy, that's, you know,
yeah.
I think, you know, we cover many conspiracy theories on this program, and I always think where there's smoke, there's fire. But I think the mistake they make is everything is a conspiracy. And even though a lot of things might be the conspiracy, you can't just willy-nilly say it's everything, because I think what it does, it clouds people's ability to believe in you. And so I wish that they would take every case slowly and steadily, analyze it, come up with their conclusions, whether it's 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination, why we went into Iraq, what else is happening with a new world order, rather than say, you know, my gosh, you know, if, for example, you know, some like the tragedy that occurred with our special forces that were part of the group that got Osama bin Laden, reportedly. And, you know, immediately it was, we shot them down to silence them so they wouldn't say what was happening. And, you know, that's one thing I just don't believe. And, you know, they weren't the members that shot bin Laden, so they weren't even the guys in the direct know of what was going on. But my point is, everything's a conspiracy theory, and that's a mistake. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I would say just analyze these situations, and the ones that reveal themselves as conspiracies will, and the ones that don't, won't. And the way to analyze that is to use, I mean, the worst thing to do is just to believe what you're told. And people in the that follow the mass media do that, but also conspiracy theorists will find their favorite conspiracy theory person and just believe, you know, they won't properly check them. And, you know, be skeptical and doubtful and so forth. We can't just believe what we're told. We have to use our own senses and our own skepticism to really analyze each situation. And that's, I mean, nobody's ever going to know everything. I mean, you can't read 1,000 books in a year. And I mean, it's hard to know everything. So you need other techniques for learning how to really know things well. And I think I hold that skepticism and empiricism are two incredible techniques where if you know how to use them on the spot, you can just kind of learn how to know the proper thing to do, know the proper information, know the proper way to act and so forth, because you never can accumulate enough information to know things. Another problem with trying to accumulate information, George, is you ever notice that theories are always getting overturned? Remember Newton, you know, came up with gravity for 300 years. People called him a god because it was so amazing. Yeah. And then Einstein came along and turned it on his head. And everybody praised Einstein so much, and now quantum physics is coming along and turning Einstein on his head. So
sure.
Theories and so forth, really, it's better to be humble about theories and say, you know, I have a theory, but I'm just not sure. I know what my senses report, and I know what my intuition says and so forth, but my theories, they may be true, but I don't want to have so much conviction that I think I'm right. You know, like you said about the I've got my own opinion. It's a little bit different than yours about the Osama bin Laden issue. But, yeah, I think you're right, though. You want to make sure you step back. Before having an opinion right away, you want to step back and analyze things properly. And whether you're a conspiracy theorist or mainstreamer, I think both groups don't do that enough because, you know, they're not trained to do that. Schools don't teach critical thinking and empirical scientific techniques and so forth.
Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, Jeff, tell us a little bit about your works and where people can get them, the books you've got out there.
Oh, yeah, I've got three books, The Telescreen, Telementation, and Corporatism. Corporatism and The Telescreen are sort of twin books that go together. They're all about, I think they're very original studies, you know, not just information you're going to hear anywhere else on, you know, repeated over and over by conspiracy theorists. Very original study. My book, Telementation, as you know, is all about how to do telementation. And that, those you can find at Amazon or my website, which there's a couple ways to get to it. I guess I think Antimatter Radio is what you have linked on Coast to Coast, or Zen, Z-E-N, Zen, yeah. Flower Radio. So the way that I've got four DVDs for sale there. The Illuminati are the Nephilim, and one called Dark Ecstasy, and some other things, too.
All right, let's take some calls. George in Allen Park, Michigan. In your neck of the woods almost there, Jeff. Yeah. Go ahead, George.
Hi.
Hi.
It's refreshing to hear you that you don't believe in evolution. I contend that, you know, it's not a theory with holes in it. It's a hole with gossamer spread over it. It's just, you know, woven out of whole cloth. It's so absurd that Richard Dawkins basically believes that we are the descendants of two dissecting segments, because I've seen him on a program, and George had brought this up before, of, well, if we evolved from apes and monkeys, how come they're still around? So he said, well, no, we didn't evolve from apes and monkeys. We actually come from a common ancestor of chimpanzees and bonobos, and the human race is branched off here. And all he showed was the common descendant, or our original parent that we offshooted from, and the chimpanzees, there was nothing there. It was just two segments on this tree that he created. So it's like you have no idea what being that the chimpanzees and us being their cousins descended from, but we descended from that ancestor, and you have no idea who it is. But that's science, you know. I mean, it's absurd. But anyways, my actual question is, how, in being a Buddhist, obviously you believe in karma and reincarnation. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe in either of those. I don't have enough evidence to. They could be true, but don't really have. I tend to think that a standard afterlife, almost Christian view of afterlife, is the case. But I really sort of withhold judgment on that because just of evidence issues. I'm not sure. And trust me, I've had an extremely, like, the closest possible person to you, just imagine that scenario, die. Mm-hmm. Recently, and that's made me keenly interested in all these issues. And so, what was your question?
We're going to take the break, and we're going to come back to his question in a moment, Jeff. Jeff Group, our special guest, George in Allen Park, just hang in there. We're going to get your question when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, well, let's make that easy for you, too. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. We shall return in moments. October's just around the corner, and that means almost time for our annual Halloween Ghost to Ghost show, and we're looking for some real scary stories from you this year. If you think you have one of those scary, creepy, hair-raising ghost stories that you want to share with us on the air, simply email your story first and foremost to ghost2ghost123@gmail.com. That's ghost2ghost123@gmail.com. Make sure you include your name and phone number in the subject line of your email, and our producers will go through this. That's going to save you the ability of trying to get through the lines that night, because you know how difficult they will be. So if you've got a real good story and our producers like the story, we'll call you so you don't have to try to fight your way to get in line on Ghost to Ghost night. So those of you who think you have a great Ghost to Ghost story, it's ghost2ghost123@gmail.com. Back in a moment. Okay, let's go back to George in Allen Park, Michigan. Let you finish up here, George. Go ahead.
Okay, so I guess you're more or less not, I mean, there's different offshoots like there is of everything in schools of thoughts of Buddhism as a philosophy or religion and, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess you're a free-thinking Buddhist. You're not really tied into, because traditional Buddhists more or less do believe in karma and reincarnation, and you're open to it.
In India and Tibet, those are strong beliefs, but in Japan, they're much less loosely held, or they're much more loosely held than they are. Beliefs like that is much more focused on just a pure meditation.
Yeah, you follow a different path or whatever, the Japanese path or whatever. But there is an interesting book I would like to mention for so many people do seem to believe in reincarnation, which I don't. I think that, you know, what Jesus did negates the need for reincarnation, that there was no need for Jesus to be crucified for our sins. But there's a book written, I don't know the author of it, but it's a pretty interesting concept. It's called The Karma of Jesus. It's easy enough to Google that. And basically, if you wanted to trade karma with someone, who would you want to trade karma with more than Jesus? And that's what he did, in essence, is the, you know, premise of the book, that Jesus took our sins and gave us his righteousness. So he, you know, transferred his karma to us. But I just wondered, you know, who do you think Jesus Christ is? Is he who he said he is, the way, the truth, and the life? No one comes to the Father but by him. You know, it's put it on the man once to die, and after that, the judgment, and that he was totally unique, God the Son and the Son of God, and through faith in him, and as it were, exchanging your karma with him, that you can, you know, be in right standing with the Creator God.
Well, you have said that telementation proves that God exists, Jeff. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, I think that telementation sort of does, it is a real good evidence that God exists. So if you start off with the premise that telementation is real, so let's grant that to go through this, then you have to think about how does telementation happen. There's really kind of just two options. One is your consciousness is sort of reaching out into reality and like little fingers, so to speak, and manipulate, changing things, rearranging the atoms. And then another idea is, no, that's not what happens. You're not responsible for it. Instead, some other entity is responsible for it, some entity that's listening to your thoughts and consequently then has the ability to change the structure of the universe. And I tend to think it's the second one, mainly because there's a law of telementation that I write about in my book, Telementation, that basically says you never can know how telementation happens. And in fact, it typically is the last way that you thought something would manifest, that it actually comes about. You never can really predict it. So that sort of implies that you're not responsible for it, unless there's some deep subconscious part of you that you just have no access to knowing about, and that's what's responsible for it. Well, then maybe that's the case, but it seems to be more plausible to say that humans are not powerful enough to, I mean, you, George, if you do a telementational act and you get some circumstance to come about, I mean, how did all those atoms rearrange in just the perfect way and to come about in a way that you never would have guessed? It sounds like something else is responsible for it. And if that's the case,
you would think
whatever,
so.
Pardon?
You would think so.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not quite sure, but it seems that this is the better way to go. And if that's the case, whatever this something is that's listening to your thoughts and understands the, you know, the language of your thoughts and feelings in order to grant the telementation a wish, it knows how to manipulate, if needed, the whole cosmos. So that sounds like, because you could do, if you wanted, a telementational act on the whole cosmos, that sounds to me like the concept of God, you know, something that has the ability to influence the whole cosmos by way of your telementation would be a godlike, a creator-like entity. So it seems that telementation, cause this would have to be worked on. People would have to work on this theory and try to make it scientific and empirical. But it could be that telementation, that's why it happens. And people ask me a lot. A lot of people are scared of telementation because it's so foreign to anything they've heard. You know, the use of the cause and effect reality or the mechanistic reality. You know, they go to work and come home and watch TV reality. And, you know, not realizing that there's these special things going on, and they get scared. They say, well, who's doing it? Is it the devil that's doing it or whatever? And I say, well, it doesn't seem to be the case that that's what's going on, because remember we talked about the feeling mass. It's this really blissful state that you have. And you find out when you do telementation that it's only from that place that you can get it to happen. And as far as I know, at least, and it's almost like a joyful part of your soul. So the whole idea of this being a coercive process or a negative process in any way doesn't seem to make any sense. And in fact, George, I've even come up with a theory that, you know, if there are these otherworldly beings that are ultimately behind the secret government that controls the governments of the world, you know, we call that the Illuminati, whatever that might refer to, you know, the real magicians at the top of the pyramid, you know, behind the, you know, hiding behind the thrones of the governments of the world. That's what the definition of the Illuminati is. So whether you think it's people or otherworldly beings, I mean, if it's otherworldly beings, I've come up with a theory that they can't actually do telementation. Because when you're in a state of doing telementation at this feeling mass level, you're just filled with love and compassion, and you want to help people. And you don't really, that's why telementation never really happens in negative ways. Because when you're in that state, you just want everybody to be, to have as much good fortune as they can, including yourself. So telementation can't really be done for negative purposes. Now, if you look around at, if there's an Illuminati that exists, if you look at the way they've orchestrated the world, you know that they're just a disgusting group. And so that would imply, George, that they can't do telementation because they don't have a feeling mass. Because if they did, they would be filled with love and so forth. Maybe they have some kind of special other kind of feeling mass that's a dark one. I don't know. That's possible. Or maybe they could create their own. They invented one somehow with their, if you know, if they're supernatural creatures, they could do that. Who knows? But it seems in general. I mean, another thing is, George, the Illuminati, you know, which runs this New World Order system, which all of us are stuck amid.
Right.
Think about it, George. They use brainwashing techniques. This is very low tech. They use, you know, political and economic cycles. That's also very low tech. They use a lot of very low tech stuff. You think if they could telement, George, they could get us to do whatever they wanted effortlessly. But it seems pretty clear. There's almost like another piece of evidence for this idea that if there's an Illuminati, they can't carry out telementation. It seems like, why would they be using all, you know, war? Why do they use war to get us to carry out some of these human sacrifice rituals that they have going on? They could just get us, you know, why do they have to trick us into going to war? They could just, you know, telementationally get us to do it. So it seems there's a lot of little points here. They're using low technology, really, for if they're so powerful, you know, why don't they just will us to do what they want? It seems like they can.
Let's go next to Jack, Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jack, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I really appreciate your show. So I, over many years of knowing things that I kind of thought everybody knew and studying various things, I learned a couple of things. And I do believe that there are laws. And what I believe from a God being perspective is I believe in what I call the divine principle. It kind of gets rid of all the stigma behind the word God and who's this and Muhammad and Yahweh and all that good stuff. But I believe that there's laws in place that even the divine principle doesn't cross, and one of them is free will. So I want to caution people that when you do telementation, which it really is a very easy thing to be able to do, you have to be careful that you're not affecting or overriding someone else's free will. Because free will is an unmutable law that, like I said, even the divine principle or even God through the Bible allowed everyone to have their free will, and that's something that we have to be cognizant of. It's not that we would manifest something negative against that other person, but we might get them to do something that we want them to do, which is not something that they want to do.
Right, yeah, that's a really, really good point that the caller brings up. I have found out sometimes, caller, that I'll try to do a telementational act, and I just all of a sudden can't get it. I can't get the mode right. I can't get into the meditational mode. I can't get into the, you know, everything put together, feeling mass with the pure knowing that we were discussing an hour ago. And I'll just try. I can sometimes spend a half a day, and I just can't get it to work. One time, this is actually a very tragic thing. On July 1, 2010, my daughter's cat died. And as soon as we found out she was sick, you know, I went in my room and went into the telementational mode. I'm like, I'll fix this. And I couldn't get it to work. And finally, the cat was at the vet all day. Finally, after several hours of off and on trying, I finally got it to work. And I quick called the vet. And the vet said, oh, yes, the cat's made a miraculous recovery. I can't believe it. This is about 1 o'clock or so. And I was like, okay. And then I kind of relaxed and went and did some of my, you know, whatever I was doing that day. And then I let go. I let up on the telementational work. And the vet called, like, it was about 3, and said, hey, the cat suddenly died. And so the point here I'm trying to make is it was almost like I was interfering with something. Like there was something that was supposed to happen. When, no matter what I thought about it, didn't matter. Some law was taking place or some act of the cosmos was taking place. And my telementation, no matter how hard it was, I couldn't get it to work because I was interfering with the order of things. And no matter what, you know, I interfered a little bit, but that didn't last and it fell apart. So yeah, I agree. There's almost little, you can get little clues. If you just can't get it to work sometimes, you know, maybe try a little different angle or something. Another interesting thing is with numerology. We talked about that a lot last time. Numerology is the great unknown science. I will say that with absolute confidence. And the way to verify that is just go pick up some books on numerology and read. I know you've got the numbers lady on here all the time, George. Numerology is really an amazing science. You also have to do telementation in a way that operates with your numerology. A lot of you, if you notice, you know, you ever notice how a lot of you, you know, you fall into the same bad trends or good trends, or you have the same feelings recur. You make the same mistakes over and over. There's lots of themes that define our lives. You know, a lot of you are stuck in the same socioeconomic rut and you can't get out. And other people just fall into money and they don't even know how to get rid of it because they just always, you know, there's different themes that govern our lives. These are usually defined by our numerology. So another thing you have to do with your telementation is understand your numerology a little bit so you make sure that you're operating within the guidelines of your numerology and you work with your numerology because or else you'll just start trying to struggle. You know, a lot of people try to take themselves out of their numerological matrix. You know, if your numerology says you're going to have this level of income and you're trying to raise that by 10 times, your numerology may not allow for it. So you need to learn to do telementation with your numerology, if I'm making sense, so you can obey, you know, the order. There's a lot of these interesting ways that the universe is ordered and so forth, and we have to learn how to do telementation with them. So yeah, really good call, I'd say.
All right, next up we go to Eli in Medford, Oregon. Hey, Eli, take it away.
Hi, boy, so many good topics. I called up with one thing in mind, and then you reminded me of another that I think is more important, and that is this question of this mystery of why is there so much evil in the world when a God of love created the universe? And my take on that is that people are confused about that because they're assuming that because God created us, that means God is always going to be in authority over us, that there's no other place. And I think what Jesus was trying to tell us when he said we are children of God, God is the Father, is that the intention is for us children of God to grow up and that there may be a natural universe outside of this created universe where God is just one of many beings, and then when we children of God grow up, we will join these other, you know, God beings and be completely responsible for ourselves, no longer under God's authority. Now, when you consider that possibility, then all of a sudden it makes complete sense why we would need to personally experience evil, what it's like to be a victim, what it's like to be a perpetrator, to know firsthand how to deal with this energy. If we're going to be in a state one of these days where we have to be responsible, completely responsible for ourselves, you know, God's not in control of us anymore, we need to know firsthand how to deal with every possible aspect of the universe. And that's why we are put into a created universe, like a womb, a playground, a school, where we learn how to deal with evil firsthand in all of its terror, because we have to grapple with it, each one of us individually, and learn that lesson.
yeah, that's...
Like a philosopher by yourself, Eli. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, you've got a good name, by the way, Eli. I've thought of this, the idea that we're, you know, we're put here to learn things. I mean, that's in a lot of religions have, a lot of the monotheism, even, you know, Kabbalah has that and so forth. You know, the idea that humans are put here in this confusing state because we're in a learning phase. That makes some sense. The only problem is that the world is quite horrific, and it seems awfully, I don't know if I want to say cruel, but man, maybe you could have just implanted the knowledge in our heads so we would just know it. Now, I know that doesn't totally jive with Christianity. The idea with Christianity, I know, is that God really wanted someone to genuinely love him, so him or her, whatever. It's so, you know, you give them free will and sort of not reveal yourself and see who really loves you. So it's genuine love then. I know that's all the case, but it seems... You know, it's the similar idea here that we're given free will so we can, you know, learn about evil. It's, I don't understand it personally. I'm not saying that, you know, this is any problem with theorizing the existence of God and so forth, because I think Christianity is right basically about everything. I just don't get why, man, it seems like an awfully cruel way to get us to learn. I would have preferred to just have the information. If it's an all-powerful God, that God could have just implanted the information into my head, and then I could love God forever from that point on. It seems to be a better way to go. So I just don't get it. I'm a little human, and I just must not understand this big process.
It's David's turn now in Tampa, Florida, east of the Rockies. Good morning, David.
Hey, good morning. I'm a first-time caller, and I've been listening to your show for quite some time.
Thank you.
Anyway, I also was born with a rare congenital condition called Larson syndrome. But my point is this, is that with regard to evolution, which you were talking about earlier, I agree with you, because I think that mutations, I think that a lot of scientists say that random mutations is what caused that, in connection with natural selection, was the causal factor, you know, in the arise of all these different varieties and so forth, species. I have never personally heard of a mutation of any kind. I mean, what I was born with, you know, affects my joints and things like that. It's a mutation. But when I start to think about it, I don't know of any positive mutations. There's adaptations, I know, but, you know, mutations, you know, I wonder how many, you know, positive mutations are going to come out of the radiation, you know, that...
Well, that could happen, David. All I know is when you look at life, and you look at life all over the place, because this planet is teeming with it, You have to conclude that some kind of intelligence had a tremendous hand in the creation of not only us, but everything else. And we call it God. Some people call it other things, but there's no mistaking it. It's out there. Jeff Grupp, our special guest. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Jeffrey, thank you for being on the program. Up next, a little surprise for you on Coast to Coast AM, the greatest storyteller ever born.